contributor, caller called John wants to make a point about an issue that we touched on yesterday, and it's been a news headline for the last 12-18 hours, the health service. John, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. How are you? Hope you're well.
I'm very well, John. You're concerned about the cutbacks.
Frank, well, you know, I mean, I've been campaigning for mental health for many, many years. But, I mean, when I heard this news about 70 million being cut out of the health budget, I mean, it was total disbelief. I couldn't, our health people at the minute, they're on their knees, and for them is to turn around and say they're going to take 70 million out of the health budget. I mean, mental health organisations are really, really badly funded. Only 4.5% of the overall health budget goes to mental health. And if people weren't fundraising, most of the organisations' stores would have to shut. And they're taking 70 million out of this budget.
But who do you blame, John? Who's responsible?
Oh, I mean, obviously the trusts are the people who are giving the money. I blame the Tories. I think the Tories want to rip the National Health to pieces, so they do. They want to privatise it, so they do. And they're going to continue doing what they're doing.
But it may not be imposed by the trusts, the cuts. The civil servants are totting up the figures, and they've this 70 million of a cut to make. Surely if the politicians got their act together, we wouldn't have to be dragged through this difficulty.
Right. I support the power sharing. I hope the power sharing can be sorted out. You know, there's a lot of things need to be sorted out. I mean, the equality as regards to the gay rights and all that type of stuff. You know, and I want to see power sharing coming back, because I want to see us running our country, not some agent over in Westminster dictating what happens in this country. But at the end of the day, I mean, there needs to be a public outcry about this. I say the organisations are on their knees. I mean, I was in the A&E a number of months ago when my mother was ill, 80-year-old woman. And honest to God, Frank, when I looked around me, it was like something out of a war zone. You think, on a Monday night, I mean, you couldn't get a seat with the amount of people sitting, people crying, people in agony, people in thing. And my mother was 80 years old, and waited 4 hours before she was actually seen, discharged at 1 o'clock in the morning, told to come back at 8 o'clock the next morning. And I don't blame the health workers. I mean, they can only work with what they have. I mean, a number of friends have contacted me this morning, and they're saying to me, John, we're already on our knees as it is. You know, it's crazy.
But would you be prepared in your mind for some form of transformation, some form of change, some of the recommendations that have been put in place before that none of our ministers have actually delivered?
If it helps, Frank, yeah.
If it includes closing some services in some areas and expanding services in other areas, putting centres of excellence somewhere where there's... But in return for that, there'd be nothing maybe in some other town.
No, I wouldn't be in favour of it. I mean, rural areas are suffering immensely, so they are, especially around mental health, so they are. There's a very high rate of people taking their lives and stuff like that there. And I mean, they ask someone to get on a bus or a train and travel maybe 30, 40 miles or an hour and a half, and they're suffering from poor mental health. Or God help the people with cancer, you know, and stuff like that there, or heart problems or all that there. They ask them the thing. I mean, they can set up these small, like A&E places where, you know, the person can be assessed, and if the person is in a bad way, then they can arrange for an ambulance, arrange for some sort of transport to get the people to the places. I think it would save an awful lot of money.
Okay, John, thank you for that, because you're saying things like people are saying on the text from yesterday and today as well, that there are a whole raft of things that you want, understandably, and in particular you're interested in mental health services that have in many ways been the poor cousin to other services in Northern Ireland. But there is, without doubt, a theme and a trend here whenever we talk about this on the radio, and I've been touching on it for 6 or 7 years, longer, whenever it comes up as a topic. There's reform needed. There's restructuring needed. It's talked about, it's discussed, it's debated. Money has to be spent in other ways. Money has to be saved as well. But the nettle never, ever actually seems to be grasped. We seem to be having the same conversation year in, year out. And that's, I'm sure, very frustrating for those who are trying to run the health service, and exceptionally frustrating for all of us as customers of the health service. I want to speak to the medical Royal College's representative in Northern Ireland, Dr. Bob Darling. Dr. Darling is available to speak to us on line 4. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Frank.
How do we take a step in the right direction? Because even if they find the 70 million, not that far down the line, they're going to be in a crisis again.
Yeah, Frank, I think, as you've outlined earlier on, there have been a number of reports going right back to Maurice Hay in 2001, and these at best have been partly implemented. And we haven't managed to follow through on many of the transformations that have been suggested. As a member of the Royal Colleges, we are trying to sort of engage with the politicians, engage with the Department of Health, engage with the public. I think we need to have an open discussion. There's no doubt that we're all for progress, but change is difficult. They're unpopular with many members of the public and communities where they see it as being services withdrawn or closed. It's unpopular with staff in many cases because it means translocation to other centres of excellence and so on. And the general discussion often bases around services being removed. However, we may find the 70 million or part of it. We may be able to throw some more money at it to try and reduce the impact. But this will occur again and again and again.
So who do we need to do something? They talk about taking health out of the political arena. Is that the step where it's seen as no blame to any one particular party because none of them want to lose votes? Is that what is needed? Or will we just kick the can down the street?
I think it's important that the colleges ourselves and other medical representatives express the reasons for the need for change and to make it clear to the public that if we don't take these steps, that we will be continually revisiting this shortfall in funds. I think it's important that the Department of Health get out there and explain the need for changes. And I do think, we have released a statement to say that we need political leaders to really get together and focus on this and provide leadership. But it is difficult. Change is difficult. I think there's no doubt about it.
So we need to close facilities in some places?
We may need to close facilities. We may need to move facilities to other areas. We may need to refocus what we're doing and where we're doing it. Bengoa came out with a well-thought-out report back last autumn, almost a year ago now. There was a sort of 3 or 4 month consultation period, and the criteria to assess the service were honed down to about 7 and then 6 criteria in January of 2017. We were ready to apply these criteria to various services, and that may have resulted in services having to stop being provided in certain locations. It was looked upon as systems, not structures. The system needs to work, not the structure. In many cases, many of my colleagues in the medical professions don't even think it's systems and structures, it's patients who are treated by the system. The structures, the buildings of a hospital are only a building. It is the system that works within it that provides patient care. And I think over the years, it's partly the problem of the health service, partly the problem of the politicians, but services and ultimately structures have been built up and they're self-perpetuating. We need to refocus on the patient. We need to refocus on the mental health patients. We need to refocus on the general practice services so that patients don't end up in our A&Es that don't need to be there, so that the A&Es can function better. We need to relook at our waiting lists so that we can provide our services in a more timely manner so that these patients as then don't become acutely ill and end up in our A&Es clogging up the system.
So does that all mean, in terms of impact, that we have to get rid of some employees, and particularly those who would be in administration, and increase the number of frontline nursing staff who would be on the ground?
I don't really buy that. I think it's important that the administration staff are allowed to do their job. If you have an administrative staff there who are managing and administrating the health service, but they're not being given the wherewithal to follow through on these criteria, to assess the viability of a service. Like some of the criteria in that in the Bangor report outlined the need to provide a service which matched national standards. I don't think anybody can argue with that. As a group from the Royal Colleges, you know, you've probably seen the list on the statement. There's anaesthetists, that's my college. There's paediatricians, general practitioners, pathologists, physicians, surgeons, a complete range of people. We all have our own special interest areas. We all have our own ideas of how things could change. But we have all managed to support those six or seven criteria. We should be getting on with the work. The administrator should be allowed to get on with the work and apply those criteria to the services.
Should we be blaming our politicians for the stalemate, or is there a possibility if we had a functioning executive, they don't have the ability to do anything about it anyway?
I sit on the College of Anaesthetists in London, and I don't think this is purely limited to Northern Ireland. If you're closing a hospital or if you're changing services away from a hospital in Shire in the south of England, the politicians will be out standing on the picket line with the local community, save our hospital. Changing or transforming the services in a rural hospital or even in a big central hospital. In Manchester, there have been big changes. And some of the big hospitals, hospitals as big as the Wythenshaw, as big as Manchester Royal Infirmary, are losing services to other areas where they can be more centralised. And there are huge interest groups and politicians out campaigning very, very strongly for those hospitals. So the politicians, I have a certain amount of sympathy for. I think I'm probably the only person who does. They come round every 5 years. They have to be elected if they're to keep their job. The pressure on the politician is to keep their electorate on board, and perhaps the simplest thing for them is to say, no cuts, save our services.
Well, that sort of explains where we are, doesn't it? Because our politicians don't seem to be able to sort health, and if they're doing it to save their own jobs, well then they're not focused on the right target.
Well, I think yes, but I think perhaps one of the ways of breaking out of this circle is to depoliticise it. And I think, to be fair, whenever the executive was up and running, they brought in the Bangor report. Bangor had a working panel which didn't have any politicians on it. The working panel included a general practitioner, a surgeon, and health managers. They came together with these criteria which were agreed. However, they cannot be implemented until we have a working executive.
And that we're still waiting for. Dr. Darling, thanks for coming on the programme this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Frank.
It's Dr. Bob Darling. Your opinions, of course, always invited here on the programme from the Medical Royal Colleges. Dr. Darling, their representative, one of many people speaking over the last 24 hours about where we are with the health budget.